Welcome to the 271st episode of the Jamie Delaney Plant-Based Wellness Podcast. My name is Jamie Delaney, and I'm your host. I'm a plant-based cardiologist and endurance athlete living in Southwest Florida. I forgot what I was for a second. I am an endurance athlete that's going to a swim run just north of Austin, Odyssey Swim Run event. So it's going to be about 13, 14 miles of running and about 3.5 miles of swimming. It is on, so I am back in my endless pool. I don't know how it is where you live, but because of our friend Mr. COVID, you have to make an appointment to swim. So we don't have a master's group anymore, so you can get an hour lane time if you make an appointment, but it's not real handy for us working folks, especially during the hours that I work and then the hours that it rains in Florida in the evening. So I am in my endless pool, which I do like. I've trained for an Ironman before, almost predominantly in the endless pool. It's like a current pool. So I get in there and count my strokes. So I'm back swimming, running, and things are going well. So I'm enjoying getting ready for this swim run event. Should be interesting. There are two cliff jumps. Should be even more interesting. Apparently there's some alternatives if you chicken out. So I don't know how things will be. Tethered, I guess somebody's going to have to make an executive decision whether we jump or try to climb down rocks. I don't know what's going to happen. But anyhow, that's what's going on from that standpoint. I actually purchased another tower garden. So now I'm going to have two tower gardens to get going. So I'm going to put my greens in one tower garden and my tomatoes and eggplant and perhaps some cucumbers in the other tower garden. So I'm going to see if I can be a tower garden farmer here when it starts to cool down, the humidity starts to let up a little bit. Right now I'm just a papaya farmer. So we've got papayas growing and that's about it. Some herbs, but nothing really exciting. So I came across a tweet this week that talked about perhaps olive oil is not so bad and maybe even better to have that in your diet when you look at endothelial reactivity, which is contrary to what's been shown before at the University of Maryland, where they did endothelial reactivity and showed that any kind of oil actually caused a vasoconstriction. But it was so I'm not sure about this study. I didn't go looking for it. I think that the study in the University of Maryland was, it was pretty extensive looking at all the different oils and, chicken, and it looked at a sausage egg McMuffin and showed that if you ate that, your blood vessels could actually constrict or vasoconstrict versus vasodilate for 3 to 6 hours. But this one study, there was a tweet saying maybe olive oil, olive oil is not so bad. Again, very small study. I didn't look into the details. What I wanted to talk about was the metric of just, one thing. And sometimes, we all get excited if we hear what we want about something that we'd like to have. And, we can put it back in the perhaps category. But what does it do to everything, and except just one little metric? And, a metric can be endothelial reactivity, it could be blood pressure, it could be heart rate. It could be cholesterol or hemoglobin A1C, it could be bone density, weight loss, a variety of things. There are psychosocial metrics that studies are done looking at, how did you feel before? Do you feel better? These are very subjective. Are you depressed? Do you have more energy? When cancer studies often, especially drug studies, look at disease-free survival. So before the tumor can be detected again, or progression-free survival. So it's looking at whether the tumor, grows in a certain period of time or shrinks in a certain period of time, which is very different from overall survival. Some studies look at hospitalization, with a COVID test, people are looking at, 7 days versus 5 days versus hospital discharge. So there's all kinds of different metrics that we can look at, but what does it mean overall? And I think that's where we lose sight of things. Survival is the best metric of all, right? So if you look at some of the the COVID medications or drugs. The question is, did people live or did they die with a certain treatment? That's pretty black and white and pretty good to understand. Cancer treatments, did people live longer with a cancer treatment? And of course, that can be in context. Did they live longer and did they live better? So there's a variety of things that we can look at. And I think one of the things that you need to keep in mind when you see some of these studies published, especially when they come out of, the vitamin world or the supplement world, or perhaps just a website that's, come over to my side, whatever it is, what metric, what thing are you really trying to look at? I even saw a tweet that, looking at the vaccines, and it says, well, Dr. Fauci said that he would take a vaccine. Well, Dr. Fauci said that he'd take a vaccine if it was well tested and it was proven to be safe. So that's a lot different than just saying, he's going to be first in line. So you have to really read carefully what people are actually looking at for an endpoint. Many diets are great for weight loss. You can get gastric banding, gastric bypass, ketogenic diet, you can lose weight, but does it ultimately mean that you're healthier in the long run? And that's, again, what is the most important thing for you when you're looking at the risk versus the benefit of a particular therapy? If something has a tremendous amount of risk, then and a very little benefit, it depends on your view of things. It's kind of like the financial world, when if you're willing to bet on the stock market and you can stay in for a long time, then you might make more money. On the other hand, if you can't afford to lose your money, you might want to be more conservative. Same thing with these, some of these treatments, do you want quality of life? Do you want quantity of life? Are you looking to improve one thing and you're not so worried about the other things? That changes everything. I do think that is at the heart of a lot of therapies, especially some of these upcoming, treatments for COVID, potential vaccinations. Is there safety? That's what we're looking for. We don't want to be protected against a virus that probably has a pretty low mortality rate for most of us and then get a chronic disease that lasts forever. So we like all those things checked out. So when someone's offering you a therapy, ask, those are all fair game questions. Will I live longer? Will I live better? What's my quality of life? What possible side effects could this have? What are the risks and benefits of a certain therapy? And like I said, you can do that in most anything in life that affects your health. The same thing can be said for nutrition and plant-based, a plant-based diet. People say, well, I didn't see any benefit or I didn't see any difference. Well, are they actually following very strictly a plant-based diet, or are they more following a vegan diet? It may take longer to see some benefits compared to what they were doing before. Was there exercise involved? Is there actually, everything needs to be taken in context. And I think a lot of arguments are happening on Facebook and all over the place, all the medias, because people are taking things out of context. And, just remember to ask questions. I also think you need to keep that in mind when you're assessing your dietary changes and how they're working for you. We tried to have people use metrics to look at feedback, for their nutrition changes. Hemoglobin A1Cs are your average glucose readings for the month, because your glucose is attached to the hemoglobin molecule, so it takes about 3 months to turn your hemoglobin over. So to see a benefit in that, you're going to have to wait 3 months. You can look at glucoses. Sometimes people only check their glucose when they know they've had a good day. So they're surprised when their hemoglobin A1C is not where they thought it would be, but they only really check their glucoses during that 3 month period when things are going well. A lot of people don't realize their bad days nutritionally, so they may have really stayed home and eaten very well, and then they went out to dinner And, there's no weight loss as a metric at the end of the week, or, their blood pressure goes up. And the question is, well, okay, there's feedback there. What do I need to change? And perhaps it was the going out to dinner and getting the salt or getting the oil or getting excessive calories and desserts or whatever that you need to be mindful of before you throw the baby out with the bathwater, so to speak. If your goal is weight loss and it's not happening, then you have to reassess the situation and be really honest with yourself. What's actually happening. I think Dr. Goldhammer was, he called it a metabolic miracle when people, have difficulty losing weight and they're not eating anything, or, people often say they're on a 1200 calorie diet. And that seems to be the standard number that people come up with. And I think that goes back to the American dietetics. I'm going to throw the dietitians under the bus. But, when people used to get referred to dietitians, especially for diabetes, they would put people just routinely on a 1200 calorie diet. Back in the late 80s, my dad, a 6 foot tall, 240 pound man, was put on a 1200 calorie diet. He's one of the guys that, one of the rare people that actually followed it and dropped 40 pounds really, really quick. He was miserable doing it, but he measured everything and he weighed everything. And, he was very, very strict. But a lot of the apps, and depending on how you enter the numbers, people say, well, I'm on a 1200 calorie diet. Well, if you weigh 200 pounds and you're eating 1200 calories, there's no way in this world that you're not going to lose weight. It just won't. It's just impossible that you will lose weight on a 1200 calorie diet. You'll be miserable because at 200 pounds, to maintain 200 pounds, you were eating about, someplace between 2000 and 2500 calories a day in reality. So if somebody tries to cut down to 1200 calories, then they're miserable, but they will lose weight. So be honest with yourself as far as what you're actually taking in. And, a lot of these apps don't take into account the, what's in the ingredients in some of the food, the hidden oils. A tablespoon of olive oil or any kind of vegetable oil is about 140 calories, give or take, 10 or 20 calories. So if that tablespoon of oil is, if it's found in lunch, it's found in dinner, it's found in chips, you can see how that could, really go up to, 300, 400, 500 calories a day that could be sneaking in that nobody really caught on to. I saw an interesting post on a holistic vet site. It was actually by Dr. Karen Becker. And if you haven't checked out her website, it's actually a really good website, holistic vet site. And she gave six things that dogs over seven should do. So again, so the senior pet, what can you do to prolong the quality and quantity of their lives? And I had to think that, so what would we do this in human terms? The things we have in common, preserve mobility. So again, meaning that you can move all your joints, the big joints that we our big ball and socket joints are our shoulders and our hips, and to a lesser degree, our elbows and our ankles. Can you move those joints? And that means getting down on the floor, getting back up. That means being able to extend your arms over your head without significant pain. Is your ankle, are your ankles flexible? And, that's something that's very important that we address in our office. And one thing that you can do is, you can practice getting on the floor and getting off the floor by, sitting in a soft chair on the carpet and just turning to the side and kneeling and getting up and kneeling and working your way so that you can get down and trying different positions. So mobility is a really good thing to be able to have, going through a door. Use your everyday life. If you have to reach up into a cabinet, use that opportunity to really reach. If you're walking through a door, use that to stretch out your shoulders. Do some mobility work in the morning. I have found that I run a lot better if I go through a little mobility routine in the morning. I do my bird dogs, I do some fire hydrants and some donkey kicks and some push-ups and some hip mobility before I go out the door, and my run's a lot better for it. And, you know, for years, I would just go out the door and struggle for the first, 200 or 300 yards as I'm, you know, trying to unwind myself and really not have a good run a lot of times because I was stiff and then I wouldn't have a, you know, a good range of motion. So I think it's good to keep that mobility. And the next thing that they talked about to preserve your pet's life and longevity or quality of life is socialization. And again, you know, in COVID times, that's what everybody is lacking. And I think it's a disgrace what's happening in our nursing homes. I know it's dangerous for them, but quality of life when your life expectancy is decreased is it's not a good benefit, risk versus benefit. I think at the very least, the residents should be polled and maybe, you know, there could be isolation wards for people that are most vulnerable or that want to be protected as much as possible. But I think every opportunity should be made to continue with socialization with people. And I think it's important for everybody to get out and to be part of a group. We have our plant-based runners and bikers, the Strider group, so that people we meet in the morning. It's a great way to start the morning. I wish we had more people join us. You don't have to be a member of the practice if you live in town and you want to join us on Wednesday, Friday, and Saturday at 6 a.m. at Spring Lake Park on Edgewater Drive. Come on over. We'd love to have you. We run out 20 minutes during the week and back, and we're extending the Saturday to 25 minutes out and 25 minutes back, and it's great conversation. It's a great way to start the day. See the sunrise. People post their pictures. We have a lot of people that are a part of the group that can't be in town with us, but they do contribute on the Facebook page. So go on over there and try it. I think it's great to be part of a community and a social, you know, it can be a social aspect even on the Facebook. But I think, you know, in person is great if you can do a group. It'd be great to have, you know, if you have a group that you've started in your hometown, join your group with our group so that we can, you know, all share together and have, even a bigger community. The next thing was exercise. So you need to pick a passion. A lot of people, especially, I'm going to go out on a limb, and 70-year-old women, there's not a lot of them that played sports. Some are very good athletes and did play sports, but a lot didn't. There wasn't that many opportunities before Title IX came through and said that you had to offer women and men's sports. So a lot of women didn't grow up playing sports, and so they don't have, you know, an affinity for things. So it's great to find something, whether it's dancing or running or swimming or biking, but find something that you like, aerobic, step class, whatever. But again, I think to add the social part of it as well as the exercise is really good. And as I talked about last week with Tootsie, the exercise needs to be vigorous. You know, if you're not breaking a sweat and huffing and puffing, it doesn't really count as exercise. It's movement, but it doesn't count as exercise. We're way too sedentary as a society these days. We don't get near enough movement or activity. There's way too much time sitting in front of a screen, and people become stiff, and things hurt when you go to move because you haven't moved them. So it's really important that you get out. The next thing they talked about was dental care, and obviously that's important for dogs as well as people. If you have bad bacteria in your mouth, that can lead you at risk for inflammation. It can seed your bloodstream and cause infections other places. It can increase your cardiovascular risk just because of the inflammatory component of things. On the other hand, you don't want to be gargling with Listerine because you kill the good microbes in your tongue that interact with the greens that produce the nitric oxide. So it's a matter of just having good dental hygiene and using a soft toothbrush or whatever is appropriate, and keeping your dental visits up. The other thing they talked about for dogs, more protein, a higher protein intake for older dogs. This is kind of controversial for older people. Do you need more protein because you're having, and the reason being is that people lose muscle mass as they age. But again, we can give you all the protein in the world. If you're not doing a lot of exercise, then you're not going to take that protein and turn it into muscle. So it's important to have the exercise with the protein. Certainly if people are ill, we have them, you know, getting good quality proteins. And we have people on the skinny side, you know, we want to encourage people to get, you know, perhaps more beans, more potatoes, more grains to get the protein that they need. It's certainly possible on a plant-based diet to get all the protein that you need. If people have a really small appetite and they're really small, then that's when we would go to some smoothies. But for the most part, chewing is great. Chewing is good for your jaw and your muscle. So putting them all together, I think, the only thing I would say is if you don't have a dog to walk, get one. That, you know, because now you're both accountable. Your dog needs to exercise every day, go out for a walk, and so do you. And it's extremely important, you know, as Dr. Becker said, for your dog to go for a good walk. A lot of times you see people with dogs in strollers and dogs that can't walk and dogs that are fat. Most of the time their owners look like them. They're eating too many treats and exercising too little. But, you know, dogs used to hunt for their food and they're used to moving, just like we used to as well. So, you know, take your dog for a long walk several times a day. Some people say, well, their dog just likes to stroll. Maybe there's going to be a strolling aspect of it, but at some point you need to pick up the pace. I've been reading an article in Nature magazine that talks about the whole genome sequence for 38 different kinds of tumors have been cataloged. And, you know, it's always debated about what starts cancer. You know, there are DNA defects. Are there genes that make people more susceptible to cancer? How much is in genetic? How much is environmental? How much is environmental breaking DNA? And, you know, this article starts very interesting. You know, it lists that, you know, cancer is the number two cause of death in the world. 8 million people in the world die each year. Heart disease, number one for the United States, 650,000 cases a year. But one of the statements that I found very interesting is that cancer is driven by a mutagenic change. Driven is the key word. So just like we looked at metrics earlier, driven by, not necessarily initiated by or caused by, but driven by. So there are DNA changes that they've cataloged that help a tumor or help an abnormal cell line start to divide out of control. So there are what we call driver defects in the genes, in the genetics. And so something environmentally usually happens to start the process. So we have to keep that in mind, whether it's an infectious process. There are some viruses associated with cancers, perhaps environmentally, but there's also our nutrition, what we inhale, the toxins in our environment, they can cause the DNA change in some of these drivers that get a cell line starting to divide out of control. So it's a part of, but not necessarily the cause of. So we can't just sit back and put our heads in the sand and say, well, it's just, our DNA gone wild, or we have a genetic defect, and so we're doomed. Just like with, you know, any set of genes that people have, it leads us, some of us, to be more vulnerable in some aspects more than others. We have to take that and tailor our life accordingly. It also says that the incidence of cancer is expected to rise 50% over the coming decades. That's a really scary number, that cancer is going to increase. When you think about every 8 minutes, a woman dies from breast cancer. There's the colon cancer is increasing. So cancers are increasing. And part of that, again, let's go back to environment and how our body reacts to the environment. So how healthy are you and how are you able to deal with environmental things that happen to you? So if someone is, very weak and they're not mobile and they can't take good breaths, then obviously, you know, if they were to get an infection, it makes it more difficult for them to fight something off. And part of that, but part of cancer is also your immune system. So if you look at the immune system, if it's overreactive, we call it an autoimmune disease, that your body's attacking abnormal proteins or what things that it seems that it thinks is abnormal, but looks like your own protein. So for instance, joints, an autoimmune disease, rheumatoid arthritis or lupus, polymyalgia rheumatica, the joints and muscles are attacked thinking that some of the proteins are foreign. Multiple sclerosis, it's an inflammation of the neurons because the immune system is out of control thinking that there's something wrong. So it misrecognizes and starts to attack itself, the body, because it thinks there's a foreign invader. On the other hand, when the immune system is not functioning appropriately, it may fail to detect something going on. It may fail to detect a cancer, and then again, it participates in, it's unable to emit different hormones that may actually stop cancer cells from growing. So you can have an immune system that's overactive or underactive or non-reactive. And I think this, when it comes to cancer, it's very important that, again, we maintain a healthy body. When you're overweight, you make more inflammatory proteins. You make more growth factors for tumors to grow. But we also, again, those inflammatory proteins can affect your ability to fight off infections. So it's really important that we maintain a good immune system. And again, the veterinarian also talked about it's very important for our animals to maintain a good immune system. And so what happens, what causes our immune system to fail? And a lot of it is nutrition and how we feed our own gut microbes, what microbes are, we select for in our guts. But it also is part of what, how our bodies fighting off things or being fooled. And, with vaccinations and things like that being, more in the news, I think people need to do the research. And, some of these, between the flu vaccine, a COVID vaccine, many other vaccines, I think that we need to do more research. We're learning more about the immune system. Is this confusing, could some of these vaccines be actually confusing our immune system and cause us to be more vulnerable to autoimmune diseases or more vulnerable to some of the cancers because of confusing the immune system? So I think there's questions that, again, we need to ask and we need to be very careful of. And we'd all love a vaccine or we love something that's going to prevent illness, but we also don't want to do things and take things and take huge risk for perhaps little benefit. So I thought it was a very interesting article, the article as far as on the cancer in the genes, and there's so many that interact. It's not just a BRCA gene. It's not just an APOE4 gene for dementia. It's not just one gene for cardiovascular disease. There are multiple genes that interact with the environment. So it's really important that we do what we can to make ourselves as healthy as we possibly can from an immune standpoint, but from an overall health and wellness standpoint. Somebody asked me today, why should I care? I'm 68 years old. I don't have anything too awful wrong with me. I feel pretty good. So why should I care? Why should I change my diet? Why should I be plant-based? Why should I worry about my weight? And it comes down to a little bit, like we talked to get a bit about what's your goal for your future. I am pretty confident that we can, in the United States especially, can treat people with a variety of procedures and keep them functioning. Most people function, the average life expectancy, 78, maybe even 80 for most people. But what's the quality of that life? So are you happy with just life? Do you want a quality of life? It certainly doesn't guarantee that you're going to get that life. It doesn't guarantee that you're going to have the problems that you expect to have or the treatment plan that you expect you're going to have. So that's part of that decision. And then it's also part of, are you really assessing how healthy you are right now? If you're overweight, again, that's going to put you at risk for viruses. Your immune system is probably, not as good as you would like. So there's, the time bomb is somewhat ticking. If you have glucose intolerance, then you're making more insulin than you need. Then that makes, again, you secrete more factors that cause blood clotting and blood vessel growth and, even tumor growth and inflammatory changes. So there are subtle things that don't cause, if you have high blood pressure, but you're taking a medication, but your blood pressure is okay on the medication, does that mean everything's okay? Not necessarily, because what caused your blood pressure to be up with the blood vessel changes, that disease is continuing to progress. Is your cholesterol high, but you're on a statin so that the number's okay? Does that mean that you're not going to have an event? It may decrease things a little, but not substantially. So it certainly doesn't put you in the clear. So there's really no medical intervention that we can do that gives you a guaranteed 20-year survival from 65 without any kind of health problems. On the contrary, and some of them can be quite severe, and most of the time we don't get to pick. And I kind of likened it to an example that, a young person can get away with more than an older person because of our metabolic garage, so to speak, or our storage, our ability to store toxins. So one of the ways, I use the garage thing, a clean garage and when you fill up your garage. But I thought the other thing that is interesting, if you start looking at, if you have a handbag, and every time you, if you look at weight, every time you overeat, you add a ping pong ball to your handbag. So if you overeat by 200 calories on Saturday, you put an extra ping pong ball in your purse. And so every time you overeat, or there's an excessive amount, say, so many calories, or your cholesterol goes up, you put an extra ping pong ball in your purse. Well, when the purse is full and you can't get any more ping pong balls in there, that's the equivalent of your cells are full and bad things start to happen. So we don't know how big your purse is, but we know that if you keep day in and day out adding ping pong balls, it's not an infinite size purse. And sooner or later, your cells are going to revolt, or the DNA damage is going to get ahead of you, and it's much more difficult to start to reverse things. How much do you have to do? Can you get away with, a little bit of, cheat days here and there, anniversaries, birthdays? I talked about Tootsie last week. She's a big lady, but she works really, really hard. Well, it's you have to take your environment into control. So if you go back up to those longevity six things, the exercise and the socialization and the mobility, how far ahead of your, the metabolic, how far ahead of your insults are you? That may tell you something about how well you're able to tolerate it, but maybe not. Again, five people in Tootsie's family, two of them died early. So that if you just looked at Tootsie, you say, well, it's a crapshoot. When your number's up, your number's up. But when you look at, two out of five people, that means that lifestyle certainly took its toll at a very young age on people. So, however you have to look at it, I think we'd all, and it's who you compare yourself to. At 68, are you comparing yourself to, the people that are sitting in, around the barbecue pit like, Tootsie worked? Or are you comparing yourself to people at a triathlon or a marathon or a tennis match? Because it depends on who you're comparing yourself to is, what your overall health, what you might perceive as your overall health. You might think that you're okay because nothing really hurts today, but you really haven't done anything, so you don't know if it hurts. I'll tell people, I ask people to say, well, nothing bothers me. And it's like, well, can you get off the ground? Well, no. Well, that's really important. So, if you test yourself, what's your functional capacity? And I think that's really important for people to kind of do a self-assessment. It brings me back to one of the things that the other thing that I left out on the longevity for the pets was a wellness or wellness exam. And I think people get really confused about going and getting a yearly physical and getting a chest x-ray or getting a bone density or getting a DEXA, well, the bone density or DEXA scan or getting a CT scan or whatever that's going to guarantee their health, a mammogram, a colonoscopy. Well, those are all things that screen you for right then and there, but it doesn't give you, it doesn't mean that the wheels aren't going to fall off tomorrow. If you pass your stress test today, well, you don't have any 99% blockages perhaps, but it doesn't mean that the 20% plaque is not going to rupture and you have your heart attack tomorrow. So I think the wellness exam versus a bunch of screening tests, the wellness exam is more of, can you get off the floor? Can you walk, can you walk fast and not have any chest pain or shortness of breath? Can you do a 5-mile walk? Can you fit in the, what is your fat mass? Is your body mass index normal or not? Those are really important screeners. If you can exercise vigorously like Tootsie, how she works, then you can get away with more than somebody that's sedentary and they can't get off the floor and can't move. So I think those are things that you can assess on your own without a whole lot of intervention. A DEXA scan doesn't tell you anything about your bone health as far as if you're going to break or not. What would tell you more about that is your balance. How likely are you to fall down? Can you catch yourself? Can you stand on one foot? That's more of a predictor as far as what's going to happen to you. How do you move versus 5 years ago? Are you still getting better? A lot of the running magazines say, you'll continue to use at some point, everybody starts to slow down. Well, how fast were you? Some of us, are still getting a little bit faster. Maybe it's because we never were really fast. And so that's why we're, slowing down less. So if you were a collegiate 4-minute miler, you're not going to do that at 70. But, compared to what you were, if you can still get out and run, then that's good. If you were a 4-minute miler in high school or college, but now you can't walk across the street, there's a big problem. So I think that, little assessments of yourself is a very good thing. I'm not telling anybody to go out and, run 20 miles as fast as they can and have their heart attack and say, geez, Dr. Delaney said I should go out and, rev the engine. But I think assessing your functional capacity and what you're doing is very important. And, the basic numbers, that we look at, your glucose, your blood pressure, and your cholesterol, those are metrics that add into things. But by themselves tell us little about your overall prognosis. It's more about how your whole body works as a unit. So anyway, that's about all I have for today. As far as what I've been eating, I have been enjoying my kale salads with, I've been using a lemon every day on my kale salads and massaging that in. As well as getting some peppers and cucumbers. And I've been adding, my Misfits box. There's little fingerling purple potatoes that I've been adding. And I've been using a fig balsamic vinegar with that. We have had, we did a pasta dish with black beans and tomatoes and peppers and mushrooms. Tonight I did a Asian sweet and sour mushroom pea and tofu dish with some greens. We used a variety of different mushrooms that again I got out of the Misfits box, the maitake, some hen's tail, and some various different kinds of mushrooms. I like to mix it up, some shiitake, so that's real good to be able to mix that up. And, my breakfast mango season is kind of gone. We're eating some mangoes that are frozen, but papayas are still around. Pomegranates are now in season. So they're in the store. So it's a nice red fruit that you can get a hold of. Grapes are now, becoming more in season. So trying different varieties of grapes. Apples are starting to come back in. So, look for your seasonal fruits that you can start change things up a little bit. We're still getting good watermelons down here in Florida. Persimmon season shouldn't be too far away. I can't wait for that. So make sure you change your fruit up, but get a variety of colors. And the idea is to see how many different colors that you can eat a day. Make sure your plate is very, very colorful. So I hope you enjoyed a little discussion. Go on over to drdelaney.com and check what we have out on our website. People that are members of the practice, there's a members-only webpage. You can see things that are in there, but we have a variety of recipes, webinars. We have wellness challenges every month with videos on how to do those and participate in that our registered dietitian, Addie Minerich, puts up for us. Again, the Plant-Based Striders is on the Facebook page. Anybody can join that. You can email me at jamie@drdelaney.com and with any questions that you might have. And we'd love to help you achieve a very healthy elderly age. So if you have any questions, give us a call. Thanks for listening.